I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. If you live in the Philadelphia area, then you know that Pope Francis will be in the city at the end of the month for a number of events, including a mass on the Parkway on Sunday the 27th. He gets very high marks from Catholics, according to a Pew poll, but that doesn't mean that Catholics don't wrestle with the Church's doctrines and actions. Today we have three guests who have had and do have disagreements with the Catholic Church, and let me introduce them to you. Joining us by telephone is Sister Simone Campbell. She is the Executive Director of NETWORK, and that's a National Catholic Social Justice Lobby. In 2012, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, representing 80,000 American nuns, was reprimanded by the Vatican, saying the group had strayed from the Church's doctrine by adopting radical feminist views. More recently, the Pope ended that investigation and oversight. And Sister Simone Campbell, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Also with us is John Salveson. He's the founder and president of the Foundation to Abolish Child Sex Abuse. He was molested by a priest as a teenager and asked the World Meeting of Families, that's the event leading up to the Pope's visit to Philadelphia, to host sessions on sexual abuse within the church. I should add, he's also a member of the WHYY board. And John Salveson, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
And rounding out our trio of guests is Julie Chovanec. She's a transgender Catholic and lawyer, and she and other LGBT Catholics have had to scramble to find a venue for their meeting to coincide with the World Meeting of Families and the papal visit in Philadelphia. She's also executive director and founder of the Trans Resource Foundation, LLC. And Julie Chovanec, nice to have you back with us. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And Sister Simone, can I begin with you? People talk about the Francis effect, that there's something about Pope Francis that is bringing people either back to the church or cementing Catholics' belief in their church. Are you feeling that effect?
Well, I think I am. I'm under the spell. Though, actually, this morning I was talking with a political guy, and he said, well, I'm Methodist, and he's my pope, too. And we talked a little bit about it, and I think the thing that is so refreshing is both his Pope Francis's obvious care for those who are left out, his effort at inclusion, and his warm pastoral response is such a change from the rather cool, aloof, rule-oriented leadership that we've had in the past. And I think it's that pastoral piece. While he hasn't made a lot of rule changes or any rule changes that I know of, he certainly has changed the attitude and approach of our leadership. And that is historic and refreshing for me.
For you, John Salveson, and we'll talk a little bit more about your abuse by a Catholic priest, but does Pope Francis in any way make you look differently at your former faith, your former church?
I think he's definitely a different kind of a guy. I mean, I think he's done some things that are genuinely unusual. That you know, my experience with the Catholic Church is that the devil is always in the details. So it's a little early to declare victory, but there's no question that he has actually done some concrete things that I think are in the right direction on this issue.
Julie, the Pope said early on about gays and lesbians, who am I to judge? How do you view the Pope?
The Pope has adopted as his personal motto, mercy towards all. Let's evaluate the person because we're all children of God. That is a beautiful statement, and the emphasis on a very marginalized community, the LGBT community, is a thing from God. It's a lovely, lovely thing.
I do want to pick up on all of that, but let me go back to you, Sister Simone, and I'm looking at this brand new poll by the Pew Research Center. And looking at American Catholics, some of whom are practicing and some of whom are not, there is a really large disconnect when it comes to things like premarital sex, gay marriage, contraception, and divorce. Is there something you think unique about Catholicism in the United States?
Oh, no, probably not. We're probably just like the rest of our nation, kind of befuddled when it comes to some of these issues. It's quite a variety of experience. Though, interestingly enough, especially on the LGBTQ issues that get raised, it appears that Catholics are more accepting of same-sex marriage than others in our nation, you know, by some percentage points, not huge, but some. But I think the thing that's important is the struggle, I think, right now in our faith in our nation, as in our nation, is a struggle with individualism. And Pope Francis is really saying that we're all in this together, that everyone needs to be involved. We need an economy of inclusion. And we're adding here at our place that if you need an economy of inclusion, you got to have a politics of inclusion to make that happen. So I think everyone needs to be involved, and different voices are to be expected because it's the human condition, but it's individualism versus community that's at the heart of the difference.
John, you had a piece recently in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mm-hmm. You all called for two things, essentially. You said you wanted the World Meeting of Families to talk about sexual abuse of children by priests, and you also wanted participants to wear a black, what, armband?
A black ribbon.
A black ribbon.
Yeah.
Why?
I think that survivors of clergy sex abuse, I think, have felt for decades ignored and really we're usually just treated as adversaries. And I think that this visit and this world meeting is just an opportunity to recognize that we exist, you know, that their problem exists. I mean, we're not, you know, we're really just saying, show some support, acknowledge that we're here, and that there's an mm-hmm. obligation to sort of work on supporting and survivors and helping them find justice.
Did you get a response to your recommendations? Your
from the world meeting or the archdiocese
or anybody?
No. God, no.
I mean, and you said God, no. What, you weren't expecting it?
No, I've been working on this for 35 years, and I'm the enemy. So I.
You feel that way?
Oh,
you're
yeah.
The enemy?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm the opponent, and it's not. I've never been asked by anybody in the Catholic Church to sort of participate in any kind of a reasonable conversation. To sort of fix the issue. I think I actually had one conversation like that.
Sister, sounds like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Well, I do, because I think that what was just said is just about the anguish in our society that Pope Francis talks about and tries to touch, but we've got a huge institution. And I totally am with you in that not being talked to historically. There's in the culture of monarchy, which is what the church has been, there has not been a culture of conversation. And that's one of the big things that Pope Francis is changing. I mean, that in the past, in other visits, he has met with victims of sexual abuse, but there's so many other issues. I mean, quite frankly, our little organization got named by the Vatican as being a bad influence on Catholic sisters, and no one had ever talked to us. No one had ever even asked us what we did. But it was a political response of the monarchy. And the challenge, I think, right now is, and I'm so grateful for folks that speak up about the pain, because it's touching the pain of the world is real, is how we're going to break this thing open, letting our hearts be broken open and hearing the stories of abuse, hearing the stories of discrimination against transgender people. I mean, all of that is about the courage of people to speak up, to let help break my heart and everybody else's heart that this is wrong. We've got to change how we are. And that's where I think it's so important, and that institutions get frightened by candor. But candor is what we need, and that's what the Pope is calling for.
Well, let me turn to you, Julie. And I know that you and other LGBT Catholics, you know, as I said in the introduction, scrambling to find a venue to meet to coincide with the World Meeting of Families and also the papal visit. You did finally find a place, or were welcomed at a place?
Yes, we're at the Arch Street Methodist Church, 55 North Broad, Saturday morning, the 26th, I think.
That's Saturday.
And the story behind this is it was a gender identity conference with me and three other people, all of whom were very good people. And the Archbishop saw the brochure, literally, and decided that my smiling little face And these other people, were too dangerous to have in the church. And that's like the apostles of Jesus came to him once and said, people are preaching your word, but we don't know them, and we try to stop them. And Jesus said, no one can preach my word without my authority. The archbishop is violating that. He's going against what Christ said. And again, to get back to the dignity of the individual, he's seen this thing in his mind, LGBTQI, is conflated with lust and sex, and therefore is an absolutely horrendous thing to have present in the church. What he loses is the first principle that the Pope is very strong on. It's the individual, the child of God. We're all subject to lust. As John says, priests are too. We're all subject to sex, but trans and LGBTQI is not about just sex, but that's the way the Archbishop thinks, unfortunately.
Well, you did find a venue. I'm happy to say
yes,
that.
Yes, a wonderful Methodist church.
And you will be speaking, yes?
I will be speaking and try not to cry. The Presbyterian, I think it's the Methodist. I'll look it up.
Do you want to tell us what you're going to say? And I don't want you to cry.
Arch Street United Methodist Church, 55 okay. North Broad.
What are you going to say?
Oh, about this, I mean, and John can speak to this too, and maybe you, sister, and so many people in pain as young children or later, and you're told this is terrible, this is Satan. You can't, you let yourself available to the priest. It's your fault. And imagine listening to that and being a kid in the city. And getting kicked out of your house because you hear that, and now you're wandering the streets. And Philadelphia is the best city in the world for trans people, and it's darn good for gays too. But we have so many people hurting, and this archbishop controls $100 million in charity spending. And if he hates us that much, you can't tell me much is going to our people.
Well, hold on there, and I want you to, if I can, we're almost up in a break here, John, but can you kind of relate to what Julie's talking about?
Yeah, there's... It's funny, almost every Catholic clergy sex abuse survivor I know, when they came to the realization that they were abused and they needed help, they went to the church. That was their first stop. They went to the diocese, they went to the bishop, they went to their parish, they went to the priest. And that was that's the biggest mistake. I mean, because I've been doing this for a long time. I would have trouble coming up with the names of a few people who could tell me what a great experience they had when they did that. It's just – you're just treated as an outcast. You're treated immediately as a legal adversary. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. It's a risk management issue, and that's how they do it. So if you think you're going to be getting some sort of support or caring or interest or compassion, my experience is that's just not what happens.
Well, we're talking about and talking with our three guests, who have some disagreements, some serious disagreements in some case with the Catholic Church, John Salveson, Sister Simone Campbell, and Julie Chavanis. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Just a recap here. Pope Francis's visit to the United States, including a weekend in Philadelphia, is being celebrated by many Catholics and non-Catholics alike, many inspired by his humility, his willing to engage with others. But some Catholics are struggling with their church. Some no longer practice their faith. And today we're hearing some of those voices. Sister Simone Campbell, Executive Director of Network, one of the Nuns on the Bus. I do want to ask you about that, Sister Simone. Also with us, John Salveson, founder, president of the Foundation to Abolish Child Sex Abuse. He's a member of WHYY's board. And also with us is a transgender Catholic lawyer, Julie Chavanis, and she's also executive director and founder of the Trans Resource Foundation, LLC. And again, if this sounds like you, we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Sister Simone, I heard that you and your fella nuns are going to be firing up that bus again and taking off next week. Yes?
Absolutely, we are. That's right. And we're going on the road because we know Pope Francis get to every place in our country, but what we want to do is bring back stories from our around the country. And our theme is bridge the divides, transform our politics. Pope Francis is saying that the divides in the economy, our divides in politics, are really sucking the life out of our world and creating a culture of exploitation where we exploit our natural resources, we exploit each other. And that's what we need to change. So we're starting in St. Louis on the 10th, really trying to focus there on the issue of race that divides us in so many painful ways. And then moving on first west to Kansas City and Topeka, and then down through Arkansas, Tennessee, southern Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, and finally arriving back here in D.C. on September 22nd. But it's all about gathering the stories, bringing the stories back, trying to heal our politics, make a difference. It's a huge challenge we face.
Well, Pope Francis is going to be speaking to a joint session of Congress. That's a first, as I understand it. Sister Simone, what do you hope he says? What do you think he'll say?
Well, I'm so excited about it because I got one of the treasured tickets to be in the gallery.
Oh, you did?
When he
speaks. My goodness.
Yes, yes. Senator Boxer from California, my senator, her staff called up and offered it to me in the beginning of July. I didn't realize what a treasure it was, so I'm really excited. But I'm really looking forward to the Pope speaking. What's been his consistent message is that this culture of exploitation can't continue, and that we in the United States are called to really conversion on issues of with regards to our economy, with regards to wages, immigration. I don't think he's going to be specific about the, you know, the political detail, but I think he's going to raise up the values and principles that we share as people of faith, that we share across all faiths, and that hopefully he will be his consistent self and speak from the heart about what we need to do as a nation.
John, let me quote something that the Pope said. This was at a Mass in 2013. He said, "I beg your forgiveness for the sin of omission on the part of church leaders who did not respond adequately to reports of abuse made by family members as well as by victims, abuse victims themselves. This led to even greater suffering on the part of those who were abused, and it endangered other minors who were at risk." Is there something the Pope or the church or even local religious officials can do to address the concerns that you have about the Catholic Church?
Well, I mean, it's nice that somebody says, sorry, and we probably did some bad things. But this is an organization that the United Nations Committee on the Rights to Children has cited last year as really being way out of line, and they're gravely concerned about how they treat perpetrators of child sex abuse. So it's hard to get excited about someone saying they're sorry, unless it comes along with some concrete action. So what would some of those actions
be? Yep.
Well, a real easy one would be to work fully with criminal authorities to report sexual predators, and that would be a big help. A second thing would be to stop fighting reform to statute of limitations. Statute of limitations prevent victims from coming forward and getting justice. Bill Cosby is a great example. Why has Bill Cosby not been arrested, and why haven't we seen him in court? Because all of those cases, 30, however many there are all outside of the statute of limitations. Catholic Church spends hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in this state to make sure those laws don't change. So that would be a good idea. You know, people that have been excommunicated or defrocked, I think is the church has defrocked them, but they haven't revealed who they are. They haven't shared their identity. And then I guess the final thing would be holding the bishops and the cardinals accountable who actually perpetrated this abuse by moving child predators around, knowing full well that they continue to rape kids. I mean, that seems to be what you should do.
Well, as you were talking, I was thinking of reports that I've heard from Ireland where, of course, they had terrible problems of pedophile priests, frankly,
right.
Preying
sure.
on children. And you go to churches there and the pews are largely empty.
Yeah. I think the big irony of this, and I haven't been an active Catholic for a long time, but I really believe if this Pope or whoever stood up and said, we are going to do all those things on that list. We're going to fix this. We're going to make it right. We're going to stop straight-arming the victims. We're going to do everything we should do. We're going to get rid of the bishops that perpetrated this. I think they would have to build new wings on the Catholic churches in this country.
Do people come flocking back?
Absolutely. I think that is the truth. But I think their behavior is actually having the opposite effect. They think they're managing risk. That's what they're doing. They don't view it as a moral issue, in my opinion. They view it as a risk management issue.
Go ahead, Sister.
Can I just jump in on that? Because,
yes.
You know, I think you raise a really important point about following the advice that they've been given. But I think one of the challenges has been that this has been seen as risk management. It's been seen as a legal issue and not as a pastoral, heartbreaking issue of sin and wrong. And so rather they've dealt with it through the lawyers principally in our nation. But I'm not so sure that alone, changing our behavior on that alone, would bring people back. I think the bigger challenge that we're facing spiritually is this wrestling with individualism and this lack of sense that we're in it together, and that we need a pastoral leadership that's more in Pope Francis's style. And trickle down doesn't work in economics, and I'm not sure trickle down is necessarily working within the church, and that it really takes some new education, some new orientation towards being a pastoral person among the folks. And there are a lot of good leadership out there, including women in leadership roles within parishes, but that is not seen broadly or strongly supported at what I say is we have trouble with middle management. So it's middle management, the local bishops that have, for me, from my perspective, the biggest need for change in their approach. And that's going to take some time. It's going to take education. It's going to take some heartbreaking steps forward. But certainly on the issue of sex abuse, it's one place where they can begin to make a significant difference. But I don't think that alone will turn around the number of people coming to church.
Well, Julie, let me get you back in on the conversation here. You know, as the Pope, as I said earlier, has talked about who am I to judge, which seemed to open the door at least a little bit to lesbian and gay Catholics. How wide should that door be from your perspective?
Well, the Church holds that being gay is intrinsically disordered. They don't they say that we will welcome celibate gay people. And in fact, I think there's a priest or two who has come out as a celibate gay person. The Pope welcomed a trans person to the Vatican, opened his arms wide and welcomed a trans man who had been called a daughter of Satan by the local priest. And the Pope heard about this person and invited him to the Vatican. I pray that our Archbishop will open his arms wide. We'll meet with some of these people who are so damaged by just people ignoring them, people minimalizing them. None of us asked for this. None of us asked for this. And God knew us before we were born. God knew us in the womb. Jesus said the eunuchs, and trans people are pretty close to eunuchs. He said the eunuchs are blessed. I mean, he said that it's just amazing that this archbishop has gone where he's gone with the meanness and exclusion. And I pray for his soul.
I mean, it sounds like from what you're saying, Julie, is that you're argument, if I can put it that way, is more with Archbishop Chaput than it is with Pope Francis.
None of the church is good. Pope Francis himself is said things, but he can only do so much. He is one person, and he's sort of fatalist. He thinks he's not going to last very long in this job, and then maybe the pendulum swings back. But none of us are welcomed in the church. I mean, Archbishop is thrown. I remember all the times Jesus threw out people. Right? Jesus was always throwing people out of the church.
Weren't they the money changers?
Yeah, I guess. Or the people who made all the rules but didn't lift a finger to help the people. That's where he saved his greatest condemnation. For the Pharisees said, you know, you condemn people, you give them all these rules, but you don't lift a finger to help them. Mm. That was Jesus' strongest condemnation. And I think the Pope gets that in his work with poor people and underprivileged back in his home country as well as here. This archbishop, where is his heart? Where is he out at night? Where is he with $100 million of charitable funds the archdiocese controls? Where is he?
Let me quickly reintroduce everybody. That's Julie Chavanis, also with us, John Salveson, and Sister Simone Campbell. As you probably know by now, the Pope is coming not just to the United States, spending the weekend here in Philadelphia at the very end of September. That also coincides with the World Meeting of Families here in Philadelphia as well. We've been doing a lot of papal coverage about the Catholic Church here at WHYY, also on Radio Times. And to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Janine from, looks like, Fairmount. Hi, Janine. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning. This is Janine Miller. I'm with Project Home, and
sure.
We're so excited to call in today, Marty, and
sure.
Hello to Sister Simone. We are especially excited and are partnering with Network and other groups from around the country to do an effort here locally to really bring forth Pope Francis's call for both mercy and justice in our city and in our world. And we are inviting all Philadelphians to join us at mercyandjustice.org. There's a really simple way. You could just, like, press a button and send a message to Congress and let them know that we really want Congress to echo Pope Francis's call to, as Sister Simone said, care for those who are left out. So we're really excited about that and happy to be a part of the conversation.
Well, Janine, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Sister Simone a chance to respond. Anything you want to say back to Janine?
Oh, absolutely, Janine. Thanks for calling in, because it really is an important initiative, but it also demonstrates community and Pope Francis's key message and what they're doing at Project Home and the broader coalition that Sister Mary Scullion has created is this effort to take the local reality of trying to end hunger and homelessness and creating policy then, national policy to respond. I mean, it really is shocking that in the richest nation on earth, we still have such incidents of homelessness and hunger all over our country. And that's going to be part of our bus trip, is to lift up that reality. And while we're not coming to Philadelphia, because one of the reasons...
We've got a lot of people coming here, yes, but no,
yeah,
go ahead,
sister. You've got enough folks coming.
We do.
But also, Project Home is doing such a great job of lifting up the issues of your city that it's a great partnership to be a part of. And so I really encourage everybody from around the country to get involved at mercyandjustice.org, because too often we think of it just as the mercy or the charity dollars that are there. Really, we've got to have both, as we call the 2 feet of social justice or social action is the charity, yes, but we also need the justice, the good policies, taking control of the economy to create an economy of inclusion. It's just a really critical thing that we've got to address. So thanks for the collaboration, Janine. So glad you could call in.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. John, does mercy and justice, does that mean something maybe different to you?
Well, certainly the justice part is completely missing. I mean, it really is hard to. I mean, one of the things that makes it so difficult for survivors, and I've been speaking to a lot of them over the last few months about all of the coverage surrounding this visit, is understandably and appropriately, I mean, there's a lot of excitement and people feel good about this new pope and a new leadership, but knowing sort of how we've been treated and how little is done and how justice is so hard to get, that's really the thing that just makes it, frankly, exhausting to just be listening to all this.
To hear, I mean, but, painful, exhausting,
yeah.
Angering.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, all the above.
Go ahead, sister.
John, I'm curious. Could you describe justice? Because I think one of the things that happens often to me, and I don't know if it happens to you this way, is that the pain of a situation that I have this extreme visceral response to, sometimes it's hard for me to see any movement because I get caught in the pain of it, understandably. And I'm curious, does that happen? How do you see what could move? What could change? How could we create this? How could we create something different? Hmm.
So here's an example of justice. So Monsignor Lin is in prison right now because he was convicted of child endangerment.
Right.
Not the actual.
Not abusing anybody.
Not abusing.
Child endangerment.
Right.
First time a member of the Catholic Church hierarchy has ever been indicted. I would argue that's justice. I think justice, and that's unbelievably rare, and this archdiocese spent millions of dollars trying to prevent that from happening. I think changing laws so that people have a shot to have their voice heard in a courtroom, a civil courtroom, that would be a huge step forward in terms of justice. Most people who bring a lawsuit or recognize that this happened, by the time they want to do something, all the statutes have run, they have no alternatives, and there's nowhere to go. So they can't even expose their abuser. And many times those abusers are out there still doing what they're doing. So those are the kind of things that I think are important.
About a minute before a second break here. To you, Julie, do you go to church? Do you go to Catholic Church? Or
we go to an Episcopalian church in Ardmore, St. Mary's, and the priest there is a former Catholic high school teacher in Camden, and he's seen the horrors of the city, and he's incredibly supportive. Just one thing on the Mercy and Justice, and I know Project Home, and they do great work, and we're talking about people who are in pain, and often what happens is there's intersectionality. So say if you're a person of color and you're gay, those are two difficult things, especially in a urban environment. If you're female and you're lesbian, that's also difficult. In the case of LGBT people, you have that intersectionality, a church that totally disapproves of you, even though the man on the top says it's okay. You have that, and what a strain that is on our people.
Well, let's take a very that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. A lot of people wanting to join it. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email. I see some emails coming in, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Let me reintroduce our guest more formally. Sister Simone Campbell is the executive director of NETWRC, a national Catholic social justice lobby. And as I said at the top of the hour, in 2012, the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, representing about 80,000 American nuns, was reprimanded by the Vatican. The Vatican saying the group had strayed from the church by adopting radical feminist views. I should add that more recently, the Pope has ended that oversight and investigation. Also with us is John Salveson, the founder and president of the Foundation to Abolish Child Sex Abuse. He was molested by a priest as a teenager. He asked the World Meeting of Families, and that's the event leading up to the Pope's visit in Philadelphia, to host sessions on sexual abuse within the church. He is a member of the WHYY board. And also with us is a transgender Catholic lawyer, Julie Chavanis, and she and other LGBT Catholics will be meeting on that Saturday that the Pope is in town to have their meeting. And also she is director and founder of the Trans Resource Foundation, LLC. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Krista from Maniuk. Krista, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you so much. What I have to say right now might be potentially incendiary, but I don't mean it so. It feels as if the sister is being particularly invalidating to the fact that children have been and continue to be molested and completely taken advantage of by people in power in the church. Regardless of whether it's a church or a school or anything else, it's a really big problem in our society. My mother works with foster children. I've seen it my whole life. And to whittle it down to something insofar as, well, we're all individuals and we need to be in it together. Well, we need to be in it together to have potentially acknowledge the fact that these things happen and that these people are not, it's not something that goes away for you just because you can push it to the side. She may be part of a feminist group in the Catholic Church, but that's not at all related to the fact that these children at a very young age are completely traumatized and it affects their entire life.
Well, Krista, let me give Sister – no, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Sister Simone a chance to respond to your comments.
Oh, I'm sorry you took my comments that way. I totally agree with you. It is traumatic. I practiced family law for 18 years in Oakland and worked a lot with – kids who had been traumatized, especially in the juvenile court system. And so I totally agree. It's a horror. It's awful. It's terrible. It shouldn't happen in our society, and we've got to get better at addressing it generally. I think I was more talking about the leadership struggles and trying to get our leadership to be more responsive. So I'm glad you called to clarify that I'm not the least bit dismissive about the problem and the fact that it happens in many settings. It's not just a church issue, but I think it's most horrifying. For me, it's most horrifying when it happens in a church setting, because that's the expectation that we have of a pastoral care. And when you find abuse rather than care, that's wrong. It's just wrong. So thanks for the clarification. I appreciate your call. It wasn't incendiary at all. I'm grateful for it. Thank you.
Krista, no, I appreciate the call. John, anything you want to add to either Krista's comment or Sister Simone?
Well, Sister Simone, you know, pointed out that the leaders have struggled to deal with this. And I just sort of smile a little bit at that. I went to Catholic school. I learned what I needed to learn by fourth grade to know how to deal with this. It's not a complicated issue. When you rape kids, it's illegal, it's damaging to the kids, and you have an obligation legally and morally to remove those people from the opportunity to continue to rape kids. Period.
I think that, John, the caller was talking about the damage to so many people from these events, and there's been no concerted effort really to provide that post-traumatic therapy.
Or it comes, I mean, it seems you can get it, but you have to work really hard for it. Mm-hmm. Is that, John?
And I think it varies from diocese to diocese, which is one of the huge problems in our country, is that this was dealt with so unevenly. And some dioceses, especially it seems like the larger ones, were less responsive, less willing to engage. And there was a general pattern that was horrifying, that was wrong. And so you're absolutely right that it takes more than just saying, I'm sorry, but there is a it's the sin of our time that we've got to atone for and repent and cut it out. Stop it.
Let me get Barbara from Ardmore to join our conversation. Hi, Barbara. Excuse me. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Julie, I hope I don't cry too. I'm Julie's former neighbor. I have two friends who are LCWR past presidents. And so I'm just so grateful that you're having the show, because I think, Sister Simone, this is a form of telling the story. And, you know, I am not excluded from the church, but I feel like a minority in that I support a lot of things that the church says no to. So I feel like I've been in the desert for 40 years till Francis has come along. But I just want to thank all three of you for really, I'm hoping that there are Catholics out there, priests out there listening to the show saying, we haven't really understood sexual abuse. We haven't understood the effects of it. We haven't understood the effects of, Julie just said, calling people disordered. And I think the education has not yet been done. And unfortunately, the roster of people speaking at the conference coming up are pretty much of one mind. And so you see that people had to go to another church to try to even get the word out there. And we're not trying to understand together. So that's what I'm praying. I wrote to the Pope. There was a letter writing campaign by the people that supported the young woman that was fired this summer for being, you know, a Catholic educator and gay, married. And there was a letter writing campaign. I wrote to the Pope. I begged him to meet with the LGBT community. I don't know what will happen, but you're helping us by just witnessing on this show, all of you.
Well, Barbara, I'm sure our guests all appreciate the call. Anything you want to add to that, Julie?
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for calling in. The part that I think that you said that resonates so strongly and we forget is the pain, the constant pain that occurs, whether it's victims of child abuse, whether it's other people who have been damaged by the church, whether it's people who get thrown out of the church. Again, Jesus said none of that. Mm. Jesus said even the dogs under the table are entitled to my scraps. But this is a monolith we're facing. Just a huge, huge organization, and God willing, we'll get there.
Barbara, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Sister Simone, let me put something else on the table here. I don't know whether Network has a position on the ordination of nuns. The Pope has talked about the deep theology of women, women's contributions to the church. Has he gone far enough from your perspective?
Oh, my glory. Here at Network, we work on federal policy. I mean, that's one institution we got enough trouble with. But personally, the fact is that women's leadership is critical for the future of the church, and women's leadership needs to be acknowledged, engaged, and women are prayer leaders in many settings. And so what I'm, as far as I'm concerned, no, he hasn't gone far enough, but I actually didn't expect him to go as far as he has. I think the real issue is affirming leadership at everyone's leadership at all levels. I mean, John's leadership, Julie's leadership, my leadership has got to be affirmed in making this church a place that's more in line with the gospel than just in line with a corporate reality. And so the fact Pope Francis has appointed a woman, and it sounds like a little teeny step, but it was something huge, appointed the first non-ordained person, which is a woman, to lead one of the eight theology schools in Rome. He's appointed women to commissions. He's appointed victims of abuse to be on the commission that's giving him the advice about what to do globally about sexual abuse. So he has made progress. I want him to hurry, do more, but it's a step.
Yeah, Julie, you want to add something?
Yeah, one of my hobbies is reading, and one of the series of books I've read is by a Roman Catholic priest who's a professor at Notre Dame, John Mayer. He's written five books called The Marginal Jew that are based on the historical Christ, and they're incredibly well resourced and filled with scholarship. And in his first book, he noted how many women surrounded Jesus. And this is a Roman Catholic priest saying, there's no reason for this ban. Mm. Jesus had female apostles. He concluded that.
Yes. And there's Sister Chris Schenck and Future Church is doing a book on the archaeological evidence of women's leadership that includes women bishops in the early church. So there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. So maybe we're waking them up.
Let me get Susan from Allentown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Susan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. Am I coming through?
You are. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have a couple of comments that I'll leave you with and just take whatever you can off the air.
Okay.
Especially for John, I am also a survivor of pretty horrendous violent and sexual abuse from actually the nuns in my school, grammar school. And I just have these words, really, that mercy triumphs. Justice does prevail. And God also heals the wounds, and he forgives. And I really don't hold out a whole lot of hope that all of this will come through the Catholic Church. I still hope and pray that it does when they take ownership of what has happened through not only the church, you know, Catholic Church, all over the world, really. There's no one and no church that's exempt from this horror. But, you know, I just pray, I have faith in everything that Jesus taught, which is a little bit different than many of the things that I used to hold dear in my Catholic upbringing. I just go back to what would Jesus do, what would Jesus say, and how would he deal with it? And I don't see too much of that happening in the Catholic Church, unfortunately. But I do pray for them daily, and I thank God for his mercy and justice.
Well, I thank you.
I
thank you, Susan, for the call. I'm looking at John Salveson. John?
I've always, you know, one of the things I've learned over the years is there's a big difference between religion and spirituality.
And, amen.
You know, the phrase I've heard, which isn't mine, is that religion is for people who are afraid of going to hell and spirituality is for those who have been there. I don't know that that's fair necessarily, but they're very different things.
Yes, they are.
And I've just not found any of the spirituality in the context of religion. You know, some people are able to do that.
You said, amen, Sister Simone.
Oh, yes. I mean, the interesting thing, from my perspective, religion is tries to give us a vocabulary and a structure to dive, to be, have the freedom to dive into the spiritual reality. And when you do interfaith studies, you see that the reality of the divine, there's a great similarity among all of the faiths, no matter, you know, Eastern, Western, and it's that the structure that is supposed to help us to discover the divine, to free us up, to enter into it. And so I totally agree with John that spirituality is quite different from the religion part, but we need some, I find myself needing some form to find entry into that. Other people are more accomplished or have a different path than I, but I find it helpful, but not everybody does.
You know, Julia, I'm thinking back that now in the United States we have gay marriage. It's legal in all states. Do you think in any way that will influence the church itself? I realize that's more a bottom-up and a very secular potential influence, but do you see that as a possibility?
There are two aspects that are interesting. One is the Pope himself supported what's called civil unions in Argentina, not given the word marriage, but he saw gays and he said to those around him, these people have to be afforded the dignity of being a family. The second part of this is I'm not sure it's going to help or hurt. I think we're in a time, and the pendulum has swung far enough one way. I think it's going to swing back, and you're going to see like this clerk who just refused to issue a gay marriage license, even though she's been divorced four times.
That's a whole other issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But I do think there's a strengthening, and will be actually be more difficult in some ways.
We have an email from Diane. She says, actions speak louder than words. Pope Francis is the PR pope. He's been aware of the rampant child sex abuse by clergy since the 1980s. In all those years, including his time as pope, he hasn't taken action to make perpetrators and those who aided and abetted them legally accountable. I mean, John, that sort of speaks to what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it's watch what they do, not what they say.
Wait a minute, but they have... I mean, as I understand it, he has said that dioceses are to proactively collaborate with prosecutors and to report sexual abuse. That has happened.
Well, said that, yes.
But yeah. you're waiting for them to.
To my knowledge, he's enforcing that. But, I mean, I guess it's hard to know what enforcement looks like. But it's a step. So
yeah, no,
it's not perfect.
The point you made earlier, he's got a commission that has some survivors on it. That's very important. He's got a tribunal that's supposed to be looking at bishops who you know, facilitated this.
And he finally removed Bishop Finn. Yeah.
Right. So there's things happening. It's very, very – you got to keep watching.
Amen.
Another amen from Sister Simone. About a minute before we have to say goodbye, are you meeting with the Pope, Sister Simone, when he's in D.C.?
Oh, I don't know. Not that I know of. I would be an honor to meet him. What I really want is for him to see the bus. So we're going to park the bus in some strategic locations because I understand that in the Vatican they know about the bus. So I want him to know we support his call to justice and to engagement, to an economy of inclusion.
And where would that strategic location be? Or maybe that's a top secret.
Well, we don't have it worked out. We've got a possibility across from St. Matthew's. We've got a possibility on the route between the White House and St. Matthew's. So we're working on it. We'll see. Or at the Papal Nuncio's house. So I don't know. We're trying.
Well, have fun on that bus.
We shall.
And thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, all three of you. Sister Simone Campbell, Executive Director of Network, one of the nuns on the bus. And Sister Simone, thank you for joining us on Radio Times.
Honored to be with you.
And also with us, John Salveson, founder, president of the Foundation to Abolish Child Sex Abuse. He's a member of WHYY's board. John, thank you for joining us
as
well.
Thank you, Marty.
And also with us, Julie Chavanis. She is a lawyer here in Philadelphia, a transgender Catholic, and also executive director and founder of the Trans Resource Foundation, LLC. You're very welcome. And we appreciate all those phone calls and those comments to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. Times. And you can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. You can also sign up for our newsletter. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.